This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. There is an island there is no going to but in a small boat, the way the saints went, travelling the gallery of the frightened faces of the long drowned, munching the gravel of its beaches. That was R.S. Thomas, writing about Ynys Enlli, the island of Bardsey. Now, Thomas was one of Wales's greatest poets. He was also an old misery trousers, so don't let that description put you off. Life on Bardsey was never easy, but it's not all gravel-munching ghosts looming up every time you go for a paddle. Bardsey lies a couple of miles off the end of the Llyn Peninsula in North Wales, a few miles south of Anglesey. On a map, it looks as if it's just slipped out of Wales's reach, and the peninsula is stretching to grab it back again. The island is about a mile long and half a mile wide, a flat plain rising to a hump at one end, like a semi-submerged teardrop. Its geology is ancient. There's some of the oldest rock on Earth, formed more than 600 million years ago. Its theology is pretty old too, as old as Christianity in Britain itself. Bardsey became a sanctuary for persecuted Christians way back in the 5th century, and it's been a destination for pilgrims since medieval times. They said making 3 pilgrimages to Ynys Enlli was the equivalent of 1 to Rome, making it a hotspot for the devout, with their staffs and scallop shells, seeking a shortcut through purgatory that avoided the Alps. So many ended their days on Bardsey, they called it the Island of 20,000 Saints, some of whom R.S. Thomas apparently saw chewing shingle as he approached in his boat. Of those 20,000 saints and the generations who lived, worked and died on the island, possibly the greatest character of them all was Love Pritchard, the last king of Bardsey. The island's monarchy lasted for a little over a century. Bardsey belonged to the Lords Newborough, who it seems grew tired of administering to the everyday issues of the 90-odd people who lived on the island. They decided to appoint a local to do the job for them. And for reasons lost in the mists of time, they made him, and it was always a him, the King of Bardsey. The first reference to an island monarch is found in a book published in 1804, which mentions a king who was crowned in the twilight years of the 18th century. His name is lost to us, and he died in 1826, succeeded by John Williams, who doubled up as Trinity House's agent for the lighthouse built on the island in 1821. Williams was, like all Bardsey men, an experienced mariner, but one day in 1841 he set out for the mainland in a skiff that capsized in heavy seas. Although he clung on to a pair of oars until a boat reached him, King John of Bardsey died almost as soon as he was pulled aboard. His wife had given birth to a son just 3 days earlier. That son, also named John, for some reason didn't become king until he was 33. The island's Calvinist minister may have acted as regent in the meantime. Bardsey's monarchy was taken seriously enough that when the second John Williams was eventually crowned in 1874, bigwigs in gold braid came from Trinity House to attend the ceremony. The new monarch was declared standing on a chair and taking his oath on a silver snuff box. He wore a crown made from tin and held a wooden soldier in his hand, presented by Lord Newborough as the entirety of his armed forces. King John Williams II was, by all accounts, miserable enough to make R.S. Thomas look like Timmy Mallet. He drank heavily too, his behaviour becoming so unpredictable that the rest of the islanders effectively banished him to the mainland early in the 20th century. He'd glower across the sea, muttering darkly about his forced abdication by intrigues against his authority. Love Pritchard assumed the throne in 1911 and was the antithesis of his predecessor, gregarious and eccentric, opinionated but accommodating. At the outbreak of the First World War, he announced the entire male population of the island would enlist. When informed they were all of them, too old, he declared his kingdom neutral territory. "We are on good terms with the whole world," he sniffed. The war did raise more practical questions about the island's future. The population was ageing and life out there was hard. In bad weather, they could be cut off for weeks. A growing consensus developed in favour of settling on the mainland. At the end of the war, Pritchard and the island's owner even discussed putting sheep on Bardsey if the people left, with the king staying on as shepherd. "Sheep," he said, "would be easier to rule than people." In February 1925, after a hard winter during which the island was cut off for long periods of time, King Love Pritchard led his subjects en masse to the mainland. It seemed inevitable in the circumstances. Over the previous 30 years, the population had shrunk from over 100 to less than 50. The hardships of that winter were the last straw, and leaving was the only option. The king rode his own furniture across to the mainland. He was 82 years old at the time. The mainlanders did their best to make him welcome. He was taken to watch a rugby match, but wasn't impressed. A pure waste of time, he called it. The players would be better served working on the land for their exercise, he said. They took him to the cinema at Pathelly to see Gloria Swanson in Bluebeard's Eighth Wife. "There was far too much marrying and divorcing," he said. "On the island we have a law that none of my subjects can marry more than once. The sooner England adopts the same law, the better." He added that he was seeking a wife of his own, and was soon overwhelmed by proposals. Many were from town girls with bobbed hair, he said, but he was more interested in a country girl with long, flowing locks. The more credulous the reporter, the better he liked it, especially those who sought him out from America. He told the St. Louis Post-Dispatch of his wonder at seeing carts without horses racing through the streets, lamps that are lighted by magic, and voices speaking through trumpets when the speaker is 1,000 miles away. When he then marvelled at women having short hair and short skirts, the reporter should surely have realised that he was at it. But no, it was all reproduced verbatim, to the king's delight. He got a bit carried away after that. Of his first encounter with a gramophone, he said, "Some very funny music indeed came from the doors of a box. First it sounded like the grunting of pigs, then the squealing of pigs in terrible pain." He said he watched a young man and woman hold each other by the arms and shoulders, face to face, as if about to wrestle. But they just walked backwards and forwards until the music stopped. He might have been full of it whenever an American pushed back his trilby and scribbled down every word, but he definitely turned down an expenses paid week in London courtesy of a British newspaper. "I saw quite enough of life in Pathelly," he said, which should be on a t-shirt, really. King Love Pritchard of Ennis-Entley died at his new home in Aberdaron on the 20th of April 1926, barely a year after leaving Bardsey. He was buried in the local churchyard there, next to his two predecessors as monarch. Eight families returned to the island a few months later, but there was no king among them. Instead, they appointed a prime minister, as Bardsey became a republic. There was talk in the 1990s of Bryn Terfel being made King of Bardsey, at which point a Mr. Ken Pritchard, a 56-year-old salesman from the West Midlands, popped up to claim that he was the rightful king. Nothing seemed to come of that, and the monarchy really did die with Love Pritchard. His crown is now in a museum in Liverpool, but you can go and visit his former domain and make the crossing he made an estimated 5,000 times in his lifetime. If you do make it, try and visit the old king's grave. Maybe bring him back a sprinkle of soil from the island. It might help ease an eternity spent in exile. And if you hear a crunching noise when you arrive, don't worry. It'll just be the faces of the long drowned, munching the gravel. That was a coastal story. I'm Charlie Connolly. Welcome to Series 2 of Coastal Stories. All 20 episodes of Series 1 are available, most likely where you found this one. If you enjoy one, some, or even all of them, it would be great if you could rate and review where you can. Thanks to everyone who's left reviews so far, it is a big help. Coastal Stories was Podcast of the Month in the June edition of BBC Countryfile magazine, when there weren't even any new episodes. You can find us on Facebook by searching Coastal Stories Podcast, and I'm on Twitter, at Charlie Connolly. A quick plug for my book, The Channel, published by Orion, which came out during lockdown. Funny, sweet-tempered, and skips along like a skiff in a fresh breeze, a classic of its small comic kind, said the Sunday Times. So you'll probably love it too. The waves you can hear were recorded at low tide at Deal on the 27th of August, 2020.